Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Je vole sous le soleil, sans toi, rien n'est pareil. Je vole sous ton ciel, je vole sous les nuages. Tu as laissé tes bagages, je vole sous un toit. Même si tes bras sont loin de moi.
Bonjour listeners and welcome to another kind of episode of Ruler Mark. All right, I'll be honest, I'm not going to lie. It's not an episode of Ruler Mark because I'm still trapped in Melbourne. But as you'll all know, I've been working on this new podcast with my husband. It's called Dish. And on each episode, we invite a special guest to our island and ask them what their desert island dish would be. And think about it, if you could only one dish for the rest of time, what would you choose? So why am I sharing this week's episode on Ruler Mark? Well, our special guest is Julia Zemiro, who, as I'm sure many of you will all know, was born in France. She has very strong connections to France. So naturally, our discussions on Dish led to France. And it was great. You get to hear her speak French and everything. It's really lovely. So until more episodes of Ruler Mark come out, I really hope you'll enjoy this very, very special episode of Dish. Also, just as a little hint, I don't know how many Francophiles out there are also mad Savage Garden fans, but I know that I am one of those people. And this week on Dish, Paul and I also get to speak with Darren Hayes. I know! I lost my mind. If you want to just hear me basically gushing for 45 minutes, tune into the episode. But honestly, Darren speaks really candidly about absolutely everything from the eating disorders that he battled for a lot of his earlier life to his really rough childhood and then to his incredible and inspiring start in music and to the place that he's at now in his life where he is kind of getting ready for what he hinted could be a pretty big comeback. I know that I would love a Darren Hayes album. That could potentially get me through 2021. I'm sure you feel the same. So please do tune in and listen. Julia Zemiro was last week's episode. I've popped that in your feed. And tomorrow on the Dish feed, Darren Hayes. Imagine this. You're stranded on an island forever. But don't freak out because you get to bring one dish with you. Your desert island dish. What is it?
Every week your hosts, Paul and Tegan, that's us.
Hello.
Hello. We'll ask this question. They'll chat with and torment a literal raft of guests on the island who'll dish up stories, gossip and culinary secrets.
But they all have one big thing in common. They bloody love food.
Welcome to Dish. Hello and welcome to another episode of Dish. Coming up later on the show, we've got an amazing guest you are absolutely going to love. But first, Tegan, I already know the answer to this because I've had them in my bell, but have you baked anything new this week?
I have been baking up a storm, Paul, but thank you so much for asking. I've tried quite a few things this week. I tried a new Bicky because we bloody love a Bicky in this household.
Yes. Now, what did I call those?
I don't want to repeat what you called these lovely biscuits. They're called thumbprint biscuits.
I called them finger blast biscuits.
Stop it. You child.
I'm sorry, but now you got these from Gourmet Traveller.
Yes. This is a recipe from Jess Elliott Dennison.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw them in the magazine. I thought they looked scrummy. Popped them in the oven. And you know what? They were really scrummy.
They just worked straight off the bat.
They're like a jam. What do you call
them? Like a jammy dodger.
No, not a jammy dodger. Jam drop. They're like a jam drop biscuit.
I don't know what a jam drop biscuit is.
Well, basically.
It's like a finger blast biscuit, right?
Stop it. It's like a jam chop biscuit, yep. Except you mix herbs through and it's a little bit drier because it has an almond meal in there. So I was getting kind of biscotti vibes.
Yeah.
Meets jam drop.
Okay, so it's like a biscotti with a bit of jam in it, but you put rosemary through this one.
I put rosemary and my mum's apricot jam.
Yes.
And that fusion turns out lovely.
Yeah.
But I also tried bread for the first time this week.
We need to talk about your bread.
It was okay.
Look, here's the problem. I said, that's a good muffin.
This is the thing.
Yep.
So I don't know if it's that we're buying the wrong type of flour. We're getting the cheap flour from the supermarket, and I think that could be the big problem.
Yeah.
But we've both tried bread now, and it's come out a little dense.
A little sweet.
And I know that there is an alchemy to bread. I'm very aware that I'm not going to get this on my first swing at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all been tasting far too sweet, and I don't like a sweet bread. But I followed Paul Hollywood's recipe in his, I think it's his 100 favorite loaves or something like that. We got his book.
Yeah.
I'm really happy in that the first loaf I made, you know, it looked like bread, but it wasn't scrummy enough that I want to come back and visit it every day. So I do need to improve on that bread process.
What's interesting is I tried a loaf a couple of weeks back using the same flour, and I'm starting to think, much like with everything else we cook, if you go for the good ingredients, it tastes completely different.
So I've bought a fancy flour.
Yep.
I went out and I got a fancy one. It's called Spitfire flour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's either going to defend us from the German invasion or it's going to make a really good loaf of bread. I'm not sure which one.
Just throwing a cob loaf at the Jerry's. Anyway, so hopefully that pans out well. But you know, this brings us on to our guest, actually, because our guest, she
fought in Dunkirk. What are you getting at here?
Well, she's half French. And, you know, the French love their bread.
They do indeed.
Yeah.
Today's guest is a TV presenter, actor, comedian, radio host, singer. You might have seen her on Rockwiz or hosting Eurovision or...
Or Julie Zemiro's Home Delivery. Oh, that's the name.
Oh, that's the name. We've given it away.
Yeah.
Look, we cannot express how excited we are to have Julia Zemiro on the show. If there's anyone who can survive the horrors of this island, maybe it's her.
We're completely given up trying to sell it as a livable place, haven't we?
I have to admit though, if the SAS guy didn't make it, I don't know how Julia's going to go, but you never know.
Well, here she is, Julia Zemiro.
Tegan and Paul.
I saw you play Lady Macbeth.
You are fucking joking.
I was right there. I was with you with the whole mother's milk bit. It was just really, really weird and wild. Oh. It was great.
Tegan, that's exciting.
Yeah, it was.
Hang on, what do you mean, mother's milk?
You know, the turning my milk to gall. I don't know. I don't know.
Come, ye spirits, attend on mortal thoughts and sex me here and fill me from the crown to the toe, top full of direst cruelty. Make thick my blood. Stop the access. And passage or something. Yeah. Take my milk for gall. So they're basically saying, don't make me a woman in any way. I don't want to feel any emotions or be soft like a woman because I'm going to kill tonight. I mean, it's an upbeat play.
It's a real, it's the feel goodery is through the roof. But the problem, yeah. Julia, of course, is that I was actually in a production of Macbeth. I did a few weeks and I played the Thane of Ross. So
did you?
Well, he's the first character that walks out on stage.
Yes, he is.
And I had this sort of brain snap where one night, about a week in, I walked out and just opened my mouth and nothing came out. I paused for about what felt like 90 seconds and...
Oh, my God.
I mean, I would have saved a lot of lives in the Macbeth universe had I not talked, you know?
Oh, I have to say, forgetting your lines on stage really has to be one of the worst things that can happen to a performer. Just hideous.
Have you had that happen before?
Yes, I did a fantastic, you know, we're at university, Sydney Uni, and a bunch of us women got together. We did a women's cabaret and it was great. It was called Vera Go-Go's and we did all different bits of different parts. So we got a great monologue from here and we get a great song from there and it was amazing. And on opening night, it's full house and I opened the second half with a fantastic monologue from a play by Sarah Daniels, I think, called Masterpieces. Anyway, and it's a great, funny monologue about a woman, you know, with three kids, you know, on the dole in England and great. Anyway, it's going great. And I get to about the third page of it in my mind and I get this big laugh on something. And I'm like, and I got a bit distracted, I think, by the great big laugh and the reaction and then lost my place. And, you know, you do what you did. Paul, hanging in there, and you hang in there, and at first the audience starts to laugh because they think it's sort of this funny dramatic pause or something, and then the dawning on all of us that I had forgotten where I was,
oh,
and they're now feeling sorry for me, and I'm searching in my mind, and then all of a sudden page 7 of the monologue came to me, so you've missed all this stuff in between. Oh, anyway, get out there, do it. Now, Robin Butler, who wrote Upper Middle Bogan and Librarians, she was in this show as well. And I get off stage and I'm about to burst into tears. And she said, nope, come on, stick. You got to bloody, come on, hang in there. You got to just go for it. Don't worry about it now. Worry about it later. And she was right. But at the end of the show, when we're all meeting all our friends and chatting, I just felt like shit.
Oh, that's so sad. And it makes me feel so bad. But it's so, I mean, it's got to happen at some point. Yes. It's got to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I learned a lot from it, but I did have to have someone sit on book for the next 2 weeks of this run just in case. I think I forgot it. I think it's about preparation. I hadn't quite properly, deeply prepared and rehearsed it enough, I think.
Let's say, okay, let's apply this to food. Let's say you've got a recipe and you are cooking the recipe from memory. Let's say you've gone on holiday and you don't have the recipe with you, right?
Mm.
And there's time pressure because you're cooking for somebody and then you forget a big chunk and then you skip to page 7. Is it going to be edible? Is the effort enough? Can you salvage things that way?
Okay, well, as you well know, you know, if, as we've seen so many times on the televisions, particularly the children's MasterChef, there was an episode with a little girl and her thing was baking. She was a brilliant baker. There wasn't a better baker in the lot of them. And they finally get a challenge where they have to bake and she completely forgets the flour in the cake.
Yeah.
Like she's just, you know what I mean? She just has a complete, now that cake won't be great. You know, there are things you can't, especially with baking and all that. But with savory, I reckon you can always improvise, can't you? There's always something in the cupboard that you can get out. It'll be a little bottle of ketchup munis that'll put in there and go, a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of salt. Or it might be, I need some rice or something to sort of soak it all up. Or you'll chuck in some cream or some yogurt to save something. But, I mean, yeah, I think baking's a tough one, but you've always got to try. They're the best moments, aren't they, when it all goes horribly wrong?
I do agree, but I think that all those wonderful solutions that you were rolling off then, those come to somebody who has that the grounding in that cooking instinct. And I believe that you have such a long and wonderful history with food. Am I right that you grew up on top of a restaurant, Paul was telling me? You lived above a restaurant?
Yeah, we did. So my mum's Australian. She went to France. She met my dad there. He had done lots of different things. But when they came to Australia, in King's Cross, there was this very fancy French restaurant called Le Trianon. And my dad was a waiter there and then became front of house sort of maitre d'. And I think you watch them all cooking and think, well, I can't cook. I'm not trained, but I'd really love to run my own business. And let's face it, small business, Australia, that's the thing to do in 1970, whatever it is, too. And he bought a going concern and it was a restaurant. He bought the business in Bondi Road in Bondi and it was called the Home Cooking Restaurant. And for $1.25, you got a 3-course meal. I know.
I love.
Happy times. Happy times. So, let's just pull back your expectations on that, though. So, it was an Aussie restaurant. It was Aussie food, or let's say more English food. So, you'd get a soup, a bowl of soup, and then a roast of your choice. So that you'd either get roast chicken, or roast beef, or roast lamb, and then there'd be baked potato and 3 veg. And then for dessert, you'd get rhubarb or perhaps a jelly and ice cream or steam pudding with custard. And my dad, being French, looked at this food and just went, what is this? But the restaurant was full every night and really popular and it opened at 5 and it closed at 8. And I know. And it was great. It was a going concern and did really well. And he learned how to cook this rather basic food, but basically learned how to run a business, how to run a kitchen. And then years later, he was able to get his own restaurant where he did plenty of French food, but totally self-taught, would never call himself a chef. But to live on top of a restaurant is quite exciting and fun, and you get home from school and there'd be the industrial fridge and there'd be our fridge. And when Dad eventually thought, can we have a bit more than just jelly and ice cream, he started making chocolate mousse, and there'd always be a little chocolate mousse in the personal fridge for me, so I'd have that every Thursday. So yeah, it was a nice adventure. And when you see how food is made all the time and it's just part of your world, you start to not think it's anything special or weird, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I just, the problem with me is I'm picturing, when you said you lived above a restaurant, I had like Phantom of the Opera in my head. Like, like you guys were hiding in the roof of a restaurant.
No, that's just where we lived above it, you see. So we had a little lounge room up there and a bathroom and my bedroom and my mum's bedroom. It wasn't fancy, that's for sure. We did have a nice view over the back of not Bondi Beach, we're more up the road there, but over the houses. And I've always loved living up high in an apartment, not super high, just like a couple of floors up. Mm. But you also see how hard the job is. It's a very difficult job. And I, you know, my dad would come up and kiss me goodnight while he was, you know, during service. And he'd be sweating, and I'd sometimes go down and bring him a little cold face washer just to sort of wash it. And you see from the beginning that it's hard work. It's basically peeling a lot of potatoes and peeling a lot of carrots, and especially for that food. And then later when I waitressed for him in his French restaurant, yeah, it's, as you know, I think there's always a real fantasy around how easy running a food business is, and it just isn't.
It seems to be, from, you know, the few people that I've spoke to within the industry, that there are quite a few parallels between, you know, comedy and the sort of path that we've gone down, Julia, and that there's a lot of glamour from the outside, but then you've really, really got to love it, because there's a lot of slogging away as well, and there's a lot of peeling potatoes.
Yeah, and also, you know, we often I waitressed a lot too, and I kid you not, my years of waitressing, including 3 years at the Spaghetti Tree, the top of Bourke Street there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, where people did come to eat before or after Phantom of the Opera at the Princess. But I think waitressing, actually, when you're going out there and trying to win people over because you hope you'll get a tip, but also serve them well, I mean, that's made me the MC I am today. I have no doubt that's part of the training and the 3 years at acting school and all the rest. But to me, to have to always go out there and meet new people, win them over, deal with them, deal with how rude they can be, deal with how difficult they are, deal with how lovely they are, do celebrations, all of that. It was always about feeling like you are the conduit to them having a good time in this restaurant. And the idea of putting on a bit of a show. And, you know, people say with the kitchen, backstage in a kitchen feels like backstage in a theatre, and then you all come out full of smiles and ready to go.
That's fascinating. I've never actually thought of it like that, but you're right. There is so much performance in waitering, or waitering, especially if you want that tip at the end of the night.
No, we can't let normies find this out, Julia and Tegan, because otherwise they'll start to... Because you know how people find that, like, people in the entertainment industry are working in hospitality, they'll start to think of it as some sort of training that we need to do, as opposed to a thing that we're doing just to scrape by, right? I don't want them to think it's actually a vital, useful tool in our arsenal.
Okay, well, I guess too, because my father had been a waiter in France, you know, I think Americans really ruin service, because Americans sort of serve you like they're your servant.
Yeah.
So, and because they're so badly paid, poor things as well. But I've literally been in America and people have been kneeling at the table. Waiters kneel at the table. And I go, in France, to kneel at a table if you're a waiter, even though you think it's making you more close to the customer or dropping your status or something, is like, are you insane? In France, being a server, a waiter, is a profession, and there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And when you go into a cafe there, the lowliest cafe or the highest restaurant, they're basically saying, I think, or my reading of it is, hi, I'm your waiter. I will do everything you want, but I will not do anything you want. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know this place. I know how it works. I will get you everything you need, but you won't be treating me like a garçon, come over here kind of situation. And I think the Americans have really ruined that, because there's an expectation that the customer is king, and not if they're being unreasonable, not if they're being rude. And I know that there are rude waiters and stuff as well, but yeah, the French don't see it as something you do between jobs. So I guess I never felt it was something I was doing between jobs. I felt it was something I was very good at, and worked in all kinds of different establishments, and fancy ones and not fancy ones. And yeah, I don't know. I just think it made me very resilient.
Can we talk for a minute though about French cuisine and French culture? Because of course your dad was born in France. You were born in France as well. You spent the first 2 years there. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And then I went to a French school in Sydney.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Well, Tegan spent the better part of on and off for several years trying to learn French. And
Tegan!
Mostly all I learned was about verbs and something I hadn't learned before. But no, I've stopped for the past 6 months, so it's all gone away again. But I do hope to pick it up. But
I mean, Tegan, I'm always here for French conversation. Je suis là, je vais t'aider, I can help you. True.
Thank you. Well, I will
always. For freeze.
My tutor got back in touch the other day and she's very angry with me for not reaching out. So I will get back onto her very soon. But
good girl.
I mean, are you feeling this distance between us and France at the moment? How are you going with not being able to travel back there right now? Europe, really, because you're just, it's such a part of your life.
Yeah, Eurovision. I miss that. My father very sadly passed away just before COVID here in Sydney. And luckily, I suppose, we were able to have a funeral, which was amazing. But part of what I wanted to do in 2020, in August, my partner and I were going to go to France because we'd never been there together. Mm. We were going to celebrate his 60th, and I was then going to scatter some of my dad's ashes in his hometown. So that will have to wait. And I have like a sort of a odd, well, you know, I know my family in Aix-en-Provence in the south of France, and it's a tricky one when you don't see them regularly, right? So I wouldn't say that I'm just dying to get back over there. We did have a mission, certainly. But more and more, I genuinely feel like in post-COVID times, if there is going to be a situation, which I really wouldn't be surprised where they say, well, only a certain amount of people can fly per year because we want to really reduce our carbon footprint, et cetera, et cetera. I will happily never go anywhere again because I've been away so much. And I just want to go, let the young people go who've never been, or let that, you know, retired couple that have saved up money all their lives to travel and go. And that's the beauty of food, though, because you can make some of that food in Australia and go, well, this is what it feels like to be there. But look, there's no doubt that the genes in the food in a country, so let's say the wheat in France is different to the wheat we get here, the dairy in France is different to here, and you often hear of people who say they are celiacs or lactose intolerant and they go to France and all of a sudden they seem to be able to eat that food okay. And you're like, well, either you're a liar or there is something maybe in the genes. It's so old, you know, the genes is not the word I'm looking for. What's in food? Genetically, anything genetically modified within it, if you know what I mean. It's so old and real and, you know, untouched by something. I don't know. But apparently, you know, maybe that's why the stuff tastes better. I don't know. But I do love the way they eat, and I like how they sit down to eat, and I like how vegetables are important in every meal. And yeah, I do have, I guess, certain principles around food that I got from my dad and my French loving mum.
So what are you actually doing then lately to travel with food? Because it does sound like it's, you know, it's working a treat in that case. You're the first person I've ever spoken to, not ever, but since COVID started, that has actually gone, I would be happy not to travel again. I find this fascinating. Yes. So you must be in something real good.
No, well, I guess I've traveled so much because of, say, Eurovision, where I go away once a year. And I didn't travel at all in my 30s, really. This all happened in my 40s. I don't want to go all deep meaningful on you, but I'm really feeling the weight on my shoulders of young people going to dream about if they can't go anywhere, right? And I feel like, honestly, I could die tomorrow having gone to some amazing places, eaten some amazing meals, had amazing love stories, had amazing friends. It's fine. But I just think that what is a new budding performer, let's say, where the hell are they going to perform now? What's going to get them excited? What about the middle? I don't know. I just feel like if at some point they're going to say, well, only a certain amount of people can fly every year, I'm happy to stand down because I feel nervous about flying again. I feel nervous about getting back and forth and maybe catching COVID. And part of me goes, well, I'm 54. Maybe I'm done. We live in a beautiful country. I'm happy to travel to places I've never been to in Australia, even though we have traveled a lot with my TV show, Home Delivery, and with RockWiz. We've toured a lot and regionally with RockWiz. So, yeah, and I might not have said that 2 years ago, but certainly in COVID times, I really think, what are young people dreaming about? And what can they set their futures and hopes to, I guess?
I think that's an incredibly beautiful way of looking at it. And if it's anything, I think in COVID, everybody has had those moments of feeling a bit woe is me, and a bit, you know, a lot of lamenting about their situations. And I get stuck in that. And I went out to the pub about a week ago. No, it would have been a little bit earlier before lockdown with a friend who is a high school teacher. And we were looking at it through the eyes of what it must feel like to have been in year 11 or year 12 and have no contact with your schoolmates, or to be just at that point where you were just about to go into university or just go out there into the world and have it all closed down. And we're all going through struggles, but I had a really similar thought of going, yeah, I'm okay in this moment to sit in my apartment with my husband and to cook, and that's all right, because I have had a lot of things before that. And yeah, it's interesting. I've not heard anybody else talking about it quite that way. So it's lovely. I think it's a really nice way of looking at it.
But let's say we go back 2 years and you know, before you had this sort of watershed moment, Julia, were there any moments? Yes. Were there any countries that you had on your kind of like must see bucket list before all this stuff, you know, fell?
Yes.
Like, are there any,
oh, yes.
And do you think it would be possible with a bit of evangelizing and a bit of talking to kind of reignite that fire in you? Did you, like, where haven't you been that you are dying to go?
Okay. Well, if it was before COVID times, yep. I would certainly go back to France. No doubt. I would happily go and sit anywhere in Paris. And I know that's a cliche, but it is an absolutely beautiful town and it's beautiful from every angle. And I feel like I'm in a film and I speak the language, so I understand what's going on. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I've been to Denmark a lot, which I love too, because my partner's Danish and I love the vibe there, but I've not been to Iceland.
Oh.
That's where I'd like to go. Yeah. I would love to go to Reykjavik. I'd love to find Björk to do a home delivery.
That would be so good.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, because you know so much of her, a lot of her music is so, she talks a lot about landscape, and we know that landscape is a big part of her. So to walk along some kind of barren, volcanic, black kind of, you know, mountain and have her talk about her music, oh my God, with a little bottle of something. Oh, yes, please.
But can you imagine, I'm just sitting here thinking, I mean, first of all, we have to get Björk on the show and we have to get you on the show with Björk. But
oh my,
I mean,
God.
How much of a destination and your desire to travel to it comes down to the food in that place? So I couldn't tell
Heaps.
You really, because I know for you but I couldn't tell you what is Icelandic food like? Do you know what they
eat? I mean, sure, Paul Tegan, I'm not going there for the food. That's absolutely correct. I'm going there for the vibe, and no, you will not get anything fresh there. So I would say, and even Denmark, they have, yeah, I mean, you know, 20 years ago you'd be lucky to have some garlic in any dish there. That's not their vibe either. They're very simple. No, Italy. Italy's the place to go for food. I mean, and in my final dish, you know, that I'll tell you about, even though it's not technically Italian, but I mean anything with tomato or roast tomato in it, that sort of, that people say there's an umami flavor to tomato or baked tomato. That is my jam. And I would go anything. It's also fresh and olive oily and olivey and greeny. And oh my God, the tastes are unbelievable. And pasta's delicious. And yeah, I think Italy would be the place. I haven't been there enough, I've got to say, but any kind of Italian food in that way. And the south of France, in a way, has its Italian vibe. So the north of France certainly has the colder weather and the richer sauces and a lot of creamy stuff. But the more south you go and close to Marseille, which is a port town where they make bouillabaisse, and it can only taste a certain way there because they're using certain fish from a salty sea like the Mediterranean. You know, that'd be magical. I'd love to go back there. And they certainly have like an Italian influence there on the side, there on the right-hand side of the country where I'm from and my dad's from. So, yeah, that's where I'd go for food. No, I don't think I'll be getting anything fresh in Iceland, no. You're there for the baths.
Björk is so esoteric, but I can't see her eating. I think she kind of just uses photosynthesis or something.
I think she vibes just from, flower. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think music feeds her. Music feeds her.
Exactly.
Singing feeds her.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I can guess, though, that there is another place that you probably would like to travel to just for the vibes and not so much the food. In fact, I know this because this is how you and Paul got to know each other.
Yes.
So you both started chatting online, correct me if I'm wrong, because you were both fanning out, crushing, if you will, on the actor
Douglas Henschel.
Douglas, who is the lead of the incredibly wonderful television show Shetland. Is that correct? Is that how you both know each other?
Yeah. I mean, I do look for the occasional person online that might be into Shetland. I mean, I'm not going to shove it down people's throats, but I mean, Paul, you'll agree with me that Shetland, the islands and where they film that show, it's not unlike Iceland.
No, it's not. But I mean, part of the reason I want to go there is, you're right, I wouldn't want to go for the food. I want to go there to see Jimmy Perez swanning around with his beautiful pea coat.
Yes.
Oh, what a prince.
Oh, what a time. Oh, but I mean, I reckon the seafood would be great there. So I guess if I really do like seafood, I'd be interested in that. Keep it simple, everyone. There must be a nice fancy restaurant there.
You'd think so.
I've heard that you and Tegan enjoy a fish and chip as well. You like a bit of a fish and chip. I love the idea of going to many, many towns, just ordering the same meal and going, how do you do your fish and chips? Or how do you do your chocolate mousse? And suss it out. But, Shetland. I mean, I love it. I love the accent. I love the darkness. I love the ruggeds. Like you said, that the peacoat.
I didn't even know it was a place. I thought it was only a pony. And then I didn't realize. I was like, oh, what's this place? Shetland. There's a whole other island above Scotland.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I wonder if people have that about Tasmania. And they go, what?
It's the vibe of it, definitely the vibe, you know, where you, those sea towns. And also when you watch a lot of Danish TV shows, which we all have, and I mean, I adore as well, they're always going up to Greenland to do something.
Mm.
So there's this, oh, how far are you going to go? Will you get back in time? And, you know, the cops are coming. Oh, no, we're going to get the national cops versus the federal cops versus the local cops. And they're all coming back and forth. And doesn't Jimmy Perez hate that when people come in to tell him what to do? No, I love that show. I love it.
Oh, great. Well, we can start up maybe a fan club. You guys can have the Jimmy Perez fan club and we'll have the Tosh fan club because I bloody love Tosh.
I love Tosh so much.
I do have a confession to make. I just tweeted at Douglas and asked him to come on the show. Now,
you did not.
I did. Here's the problem. If he comes on the show, we'd like to formally invite you on to be a co-host if you'd like to come on with us.
Oh, my God. We've got to do a Zoom so we can all see each other.
Oh, I see his beautiful face.
I just want to say the other thing I love about Tosh and Jimmy Perez is that relationship. I think we spoke about it on Twitter,
yes, we did, didn't we,
Paul? But it's that notion of this woman who works with him, who he never condescends to, never patronizes, really supportive. And they're mates, but they're workmates. And, you know, sometimes people tweet, I wish they'd get together. And I'm like, are you insane? Do you not get the vibe of what's going on here? They're equals in different measures. It's very strange when people suggest things like that. They're a great, great team.
I agree. And this is rare for me to say because whenever I'm watching a television show, I'm like, just kiss. I want people to get their pants off right away. And
you know you can kiss without getting your pants off. Right?
What?
Oh, but I mean, Tegan, he does need to find love, though. I mean, it's getting ridiculous now. I mean, you know, he's missed out.
He absolutely needs to find love, and I'm all there for that. But I completely agree with you. It's not Tosh.
No,
it's not Tosh.
Him getting Jimmy Perez getting together with Tosh is like Tosh. Inspector Gadget getting together with Penny. Like, it's not right.
Oh, Paul, you've bought all the goods there. That's nice what you've done there. That's lovely.
Well, this makes me feel good, though. I like that you've got the love of this show, Shetland, because I'm hoping that we can, you know, evolve out as yet unnamed island, which you're now trapped on. And we didn't set that up at the beginning. And I find that ironic that by talking about forgetting lines, we forgot to tell you that you're on our island.
Now, I love welcome. That I'm on your island. And we love islands. We've talked about the Shetland Islands. I mean, you know, maybe we could call your show the Shetland Dish. Shetland Dish. Can't say
the Shetland Dish Island. We'll make it work. Jimmy will love it.
Oh, he will, definitely. I did have a suggestion for your show because I did hear on a couple of your other podcasts that you're looking. So, you know, there's a dish. I don't know if you've ever heard of that dessert, floating islands.
I feel like this might have been a very 70s dish. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct, Tegan. It's in France, it's called Île Flottante, which is just floating island. And I first had it in Corsica, where my godparents used to live, which is just off the side of France. It's like the Tasmania to Australia, off the side, the little island. This lovely, my godmother's mother made it, and it came out and I thought, oh my God, what is that? Mm. And it was like a big dish of custard, more like an anglaise, a crème anglaise, a bit more watery than a crème pâtissière. It was like a custardy sea. And in the sea, this yellow sea, are these floating meringue, but not even hard meringue. It's like egg whites that they've kind of, sweet egg whites that they've kind of steamed or boiled, and then they treacle, and they sort of drizzle this sort of treacly caramel over the top. And you look at it and you go, that looks disgusting. And it's quite delicious because it's a little bit floaty and a little bit foamy and a little bit chewy and a little bit sweet. And then you get all this yummy custard. So floating islands is what you could call it.
I quite like that because we are a floating island. We are unmoored. We might look disgusting, but there is some goodness when you really dig in.
Yeah, the problem is, of course, our islands have a kind of crunchy finish, whereas these meringues sound like...
we could toast them, get one of the little air flame, the little, you know, those little things that everybody
has. Blowtorch.
The blowtorch things. Yeah. Yeah, those one of those things that I've got to get just because I want to own a blowtorch.
I know. Don't you want... And I find... So do you have to go to a hardware store to get it? Is that what you get, or do they have special cooking ones?
I think they have special cooking ones. I'm hoping that we're not just all going Ripley on our, you know, creme brulee.
Tegan keeps getting into a Loda suit to make meringues. Well, speaking of food, would you be kind enough to kind of give us your desert island dish? I'm so curious as to where it's going to hail from and what it's going to be.
A desert island dish, you kind of go, well, what would you go? I mean, you know, we've all had, you know, I mean, I had a Reuben sandwich in New York that I will still say is the most delicious thing I've ever had. Mm. I had some strange kind of dried, crusty, delicious sort of, there's another word for it, pig fat that you would get in winter in Romania. I went volunteer teaching there and I thought this will be disgusting and I loved it. You know, there's the classic steak frites that you get in France. Mm. You know, I love open Danish sandwiches. I love any of that smorgasbord, smørrebrød kind of situation. But like I said earlier, I can't really go past anything that's got a tomato-y, basil-y feel.
Yep.
And I just think if it's something I have to eat for the rest of my life, is that correct? Like that's part of it, isn't it? Yeah. And if it's something to, it's something to that, I mean, you want to be a regular, don't you? I mean, I'm not going to go there, right, and just eat rubbish. I'm not. So I was thinking, now I love, I found this on my favorite cooking website. One of my favorite. I don't know if you heard of it. Can I say? Am I allowed to say?
Oh my gosh, please do.
She's called Smitten Kitchen and she's a New Yorker and she has a little kitchen, a little flat in New York with a family. And she just, it's just the loveliest website. It's so accessible and it's so fun. And I recently discovered this dish that I'm in love with and go with me. It's, do you know what farro is? It's like a barley, basically. And I didn't want it to be rice. I didn't want it to be pasta. Farro will keep you regular. You watch. Anyway, farro. So it's like a barley. It's hard. And then you have to boil it or cook it with a liquid to kind of plump it up and make it delicious. It's a little bit chewy. And I quite like that. I like a little bit of a give on, you know, you got to really work for your meal. And it's a baked farro with summer vegetables. Mm. So basically it's you fry off some onion and then some corn kernels, some zucchini cut up small. And then you make this kind of sauce with tomatoes. You put tomatoes and onion in there. You add a bit of white wine, a bit of tomato paste. And at the last minute you put in some stock and some of the farro and then you bake it. So the whole thing goes in the oven. So I'm thinking on my island, I'd always have a fire going and I'd have a good sturdy, hopefully, plate, you know, thing that I can cook in, like a big sort of cast iron pot. And you sit it in there and you need a lid. And so you're half cooking the farro and letting it infuse with all the liquid, but then you let it burn a little bit. So you get that crunchy bottom. And then at the last minute, you add parmesan and mozzarella. So then when you eat it, there's this crunchy kind of base. There's that delicious, crazy-making baked tomato flavor that I go crazy for, and there's basil in there as well. And then you get all the playfulness of a pizza with the mozzarella chewy coming out of it like that. You can add some black olives if you want. I'm not precious. It's up to you. Make it your own. And it is delicious. And it's so delicious you can eat it cold the next day and go, you know what? That still tastes good. And I'm also hoping I could separate all those individual ingredients. I mean, I don't know if you give us those ingredients to do every day, but you could also make them hot or cold because, you know, you're not going to want a beautiful hot meal when it's hot. This can be hot and cold. So it would be baked farro with summer vegetables, which I would say is Italian, if anything.
Sure, yeah. Sure. But I mean, one of the interesting caveats there was that you said it made you regular. You were the only person to date on the island who has thought about their health while picking their meals.
Oh, always. Because I'm quite practical in that way. Food's medicine. You eat good food. And by that I mean, you know, you can eat fancy stuff. I put cream in my coffee, like real cream. Don't get me wrong.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Do you know in America that half and half stuff?
Mm.
Half and half. Like you go to the coffee shop and you'll get a cup of Joe and they say, oh, we take some half and half. And I was like, what's that? Half cream, half milk. You what? Yeah, give me some of that.
I didn't know that's what they were having in that.
Yes. So I've tried to make half and half. It doesn't really work. But if you just make a really nice strong long black and you add a little dollop of, you know, pure cream, not thickened cream. Ooh, I mean, it's so good. So I'm all for have a bit of everything, but you know, if you eat well, you know, and if you're, you know, if you keep yourself, you know, a bit active and stuff, you shouldn't need to go to the doctor too much.
Well, that just, I mean, that sounds so French.
It is. Bon, c'est très français. Tu comprends, Tegan? Bien sûr que c'est français. You're absolutely right.
Ah oui, je comprends.
Yeah, oh, I but voilà!
Oui, oh my God,
guys. All that money went for something. Yeah. I understood that one sentence. Yes.
Je comprends. That's so gorgeous.
Say something, Tegan. Say something else in French.
Come on, Tegan.
J'essaie de prendre le français.
Oui, très bien.
I wouldn't say le français. Or would I say?
No, you would. J'essaie de prendre le français. You are completely correct.
Mais that's it. I freaked out.
No, you're on your way. You're on your way. You've got the blueprint in your head. You just need to watch some movies, I reckon. Watch, you know, Call My Agent over and over again.
Oui, yeah.
Oui, très bien.
I can't wait.
10%? Oh my God, you even knew the French title.
I did. Except I think what I did, I buggered it up because I've set my Netflix to French, so I don't know what anything's about. I just have to guess. But it had translated Call My Agent, so it was Appeler Mon Agent. And I was like, it must be called that, but it's 10%. Anyway.
Oh, that is funny.
When I know we can't keep you much longer. That dish is just, it just seems like it's so nourishing, both emotionally and also physically as well. Yeah. It seems like it's just ticking all the boxes. But you, in the lead up to the reveal of your dish, you did mention something which I was quite fascinated with. Of course, it's the steak frites in Paris.
Mm.
Paul and I, whenever we go, and we're hoping that we can go again in the future.
I do too for you. I do.
Where is that? Because we go there and we try to find the good restaurants. And I feel that we are suckers. We are tourist suckers.
Yes.
How do you, when you go overseas, figure out where the good food is and the tourist traps?
Correct. Look, I tell you what, you really need to know someone there. Yeah. And you will say to them, you know, and that never lets you down. So you've really got to find a friend. Or find a friend who has a friend and say, get me started. You know, a standard good cafe should be able to do a steak frite, but of course, sometimes you don't get it. But I once went down the Champs-Élysées where all those fancy brasseries are and you're thinking, oh, don't go there, how daggy. And I thought, no, bugger it. And I was seeing a young man at the time and we went there and I wanted to be in that atmosphere where they come and serve you at the table and they kind of serve it all up for you. And it really was like old school French, you know, theatre of seeing the youngest apprentice watching the older, you know, waiter serve at the table doing silver service. It was great. We loved it. They pulled the table out for you. You get in there, you sit down. I mean, I was in absolute heaven. It was a beautiful sunny day outside. It was about, you know, we finished this beautiful steak frites, nice and simple, and had some delicious red wine. Anyway, we're sitting there and the restaurant was emptying out. It was about 3 o'clock. And I was thinking, I don't think this day can get any better. I mean, we've literally had the most perfect thing. And this was in a brasserie on the Champs-Élysées that you would think, don't ever go in there. It's too daggy. But you're like, oh, I've saved my money. I'm going to go and do this thing. And who should walk in but Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart?
Piss off.
No. I know. Couldn't believe myself.
Wow. Did you say anything or did you keep
No, Tegan, I didn't want to be that one.
That's so good of you. Well done.
What did they order?
So Good question. So they go and sit down sort of a bit behind us at this table. And I'm literally saying to my friend, you're joking. Oh, my God. That's Harrison Ford, who really, Han Solo for me, was the major crush of my life at 15 years of age. I enjoyed a bit of Ally McBeal and indeed had done a parody of her in Totally Full Frontal. So, you know, I'd been there. But you're going, oh, look, let them come in, let them sit down. And you just sort of can't believe it's them. You can't believe they're there. And they had a cheeky little cake each. So I think he had some kind of eclair situation, might have been some kind of eclair, something puff pastry-ish, could have been a religieuse, you know, that's that yummy one where it's a round kind of shrew with some yummy custard. I don't know what she had. I couldn't see from where I was sitting, but I did notice he had a little earring.
Oh.
He had, you know, when you go, really? You know, just a little stud, like a little diamond stud. Anyway, it took everything I had not to go over, but I just wanted to be that cool person that didn't go over and go, oh, my God, I totally love your work. You're amazing. No, it was just knowing that Harrison and Carlista were behind us.
When I interviewed Harrison Ford for the Force Awakens junket and, yeah, I had this weird morning where I was really nervous and a friend of mine had given me a Valium. And,
oh, my God.
Yeah, and I'm in this, like, five-star hotel at the Rocks, and one of the people, you know, handling the PR thing was like, do you want to have a drink? And so I had a drink, and then I took a Valium, and if you watch the interview, you can see me getting more and more relaxed throughout the interview. But the one thing that held my attention the entire time was that earring. He was wearing...
He was wearing the earring.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think he thinks it makes him hip. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. What was he like, though, Paul? Was he, you know, because he's, you know, well known for being quite a punish as an interviewee.
He was great. He actually really liked me. And I think part of the reason that he liked me, I think, is because
Was it because you were off your face? Oh! You might be.
I urge you and the listeners to go and watch this interview because my posture and my physicality change demonstrably.
Oh my God.
I think one eye's half shut by the end. It's not
great.
Stop it. What happened was, basically, I started talking about things that weren't related to the movie. And I think one of the things we try and do on Dish is talk about, and we try and go off topic, but with you, food is just such a natural language for you that it's been hard to stay away from the food talk. So,
and look, I've listened to a few of the podcasts. I listened to Celia's and Melissa. Mm. And can I just say one more thing about fussy eaters?
Yes, please.
Because you've got an issue, haven't you, Paul?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Tell me about that. What's your issue?
Look, I acknowledge that some people have allergies. That's fine. I just think fussy eaters are the worst. Like, why would you not try everything, right?
Tom Gleason 100%. Has a really great bit of comedy about it that you refer back to a fair bit, Paul, which, what do you call them? Unsmacked children.
Yes. Fucking eat your fucking vegetables. Try something.
100%.
Yeah.
Look, life has fundamentally changed in the last 10, 15 years where you are just terrified to cook anything. Because everyone has allergies or gut problems. And I actually think a lot of them are fundamentally real. I mean, I think it's true because we're eating all sorts of other rubbish, you know. Mm. But I do think that the fussy eater is that if you haven't grown up being offered strange and interesting foods regularly, because, you know, they often say with kids, if you put it down once and they never eat it, that's not good enough. Put it out all the time.
Yeah.
Which is why you should try not to make food for your kids different to you. You make what you like and they can have some of it. That's what I say. You make what you like, have some. So that they might taste an oyster every now and then, or they might have a little bit of a play with stuff that has a little bit of spice, a little bit of something. And I think a lot of fussy eaters have not had that experience of eating. Like my parents used to get artichokes. And like full artichokes, and you boil them up, and they would eat all the leaves. They'd eat the leaves and scrape all that off and dip it in yummy sort of salad dressing. And then when they got to the heart, which is the best part, they would mash that up and give it to me.
Right.
So to have had the taste of mushed up delicious artichoke heart as a baby and a toddler, I don't know. I reckon it opens up your taste bud. And, you know, and artichokes weren't fancy in France. They were just, you just grew them in the garden. There they were. It was not a fancy thing like it is now. So I think sometimes fussy eaters have not had that little thing open. And sometimes it's emotional fussy eating. You know, it's very tricky. But, yeah, then there's those people who go, I don't eat bacon, and then you see them having a bacon burger somewhere and you're very angry because I had put bacon in that delicious frittata and I had to make something different for you. I'm pretty annoyed about it.
It's just the word frittata made them panic, I think, you know.
Well, thank you you so much. What are you off to cook today? Have you got anything fun that you're cooking this evening?
Look, I did make a delicious osso buco yesterday. Gee, the osso buco, doesn't that just keep on giving? Reheating, something's reheated. Wow, they get better and better. Mm. So I think tonight I'm going to ragu it up a bit. I'm going to make it a little bit more, just pull it all apart.
Mm-hmm.
And we might have it with pasta.
Lovely.
And have like a ragu-y pasta or something.
Oh my God, that sounds divine. Well, you know, you think that's what you're having, but actually you're having a farro because
that's
you're trapped
right,
here.
That's right, you're trapped. I keep forgetting. I keep forgetting. Yeah. Still,
yeah, I'll send you the recipe.
Yes, please do. Share your recipe for now, or I'll give this a go. Merci beaucoup pour votre temps and j'aime votre travail. Or would it be j'adore? I always get confused with the j'aime versus j'adore, but anyway, I do love your
mate,
work.
So do I, but I'll take both.
Thank you so much for being here with us and for agreeing to give up your life and come and spend it on our floating island.
Yes, welcome to this hellhole.
Oh, Tegan, Paul, this has literally been the highlight of my week to be able to talk about food to two lovely people in this crazy COVID downtime.
Gosh, Julia was absolutely lovely. I'm so glad we spoke with her, Paul. And I tell you what, I've not heard, since COVID started, I have not heard anyone speak as
selflessly
about travel. And it sort of got me thinking about the food analogy of the whole thing. Mm. Julia is the first person I've spoken with who has actually gone, these are the things I've enjoyed and I've had the opportunity to savor in my life. But you know what? I had enough on my plate.
Yeah, she has a very healthy lifestyle version of like portion control. Because for example, whenever I make pasta, I don't stop serving it. I just keep going because it's there. Whereas she's gone, you know what? I've had enough.
But she's not even done that. She's now gone, I believe it's somebody else's turn to come to the table and to enjoy this and to share.
Mm.
It's a really lovely way of looking at things. I don't know if I'm there quite yet. I get this thing that whenever I see another country on television, I get this little dull thump in my stomach. It's like I'm missing a person.
No, that's gastro. You're very sick.
It's all the bad bread I'm baking.
This weird, cheap, sweet, weevil-ridden bread.
So before I do any of that, I am truly, madly, deeply excited because next week we have a very incredible guest. I knew I loved him before I met him.
Hang on. I think I see what you're doing here.
I would go to the moon and back for this guest, and he's got big news. We're so excited to share it with you. So make sure you tune into next week's episode of Dish to hear from the man who wrote the famous song about cannonballs. Or maybe it's cannibals.
It's cannibals.
It's cannibals?
Well, we're on an island where we talk about food, so I think cannibals is probably appropriate.
Must have been cannibals.
Yeah. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Dish Island.
Dish is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.